This is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, thanks to polymorphgames.com.au. Originally broadcast on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Here we go with our first post-BorderCon 2017 episode. BorderCon, of course, being the games convention in the middle of nowhere. And you know, when you journey to Albury and back, no matter where you're from, it's usually a long trip. I think that's fair to say. So you do all sorts of things to pass the time. We played car games.
We did.
We played sort of Who Am I, Celebrity Head sort of games.
Yep.
We played this weird variation of 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, which I still don't quite understand. Leon kept asking us questions about sex.
Yes.
Make of that what you will.
Yeah.
And then on the way back, there was a terrible accident on the Hume, which was causing, obviously, all kinds of problems. And we decided to take a detour, and we quickly took a wrong turn, and we found ourselves off the Google map.
Oh, yes.
On
yes.
a dirt road, surrounded by bushland and old car wrecks.
Yeah.
And we started playing the best car game of all. Who are we going to eat first?
Right.
And, Leon, I believe you probably lost.
Yeah, well,
you've got the least to live for, aren't you?
I am young. I was going to say lean, but that's just a lie.
Tender.
Yes, tender.
The Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. My name's Trent.
I'm Mark.
And I am Leon. And this week we are brought to you by our good friends at Polymorph Games, who still have their wonderful stock take sale going on at the moment. Give them a look on their page or give them a cheeky email. Neil will happily sort you out with whatever you need.
Mark, coming on with the show tonight, what I got?
We, of course, are going to talk about the epic weekend, plus a bit. That was BorderCon. Oh, my goodness. And then we're going to talk in more detail about a couple of the games that we played in BorderCon, but mostly it's BorderCon. And then I think, Trent, you might have some news which may or may not be BorderCon related. We have got so much BorderCon to talk. It is bordering on BorderCon madness.
And we'll also draw the winners of our Rule and Make competition, 3 copies of Burger Up that we've been giving away over the past couple of weeks. All that and more coming up on the Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. The horrible, horrible sounds of Tom Waits hoisting the rag. Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This is a show called The Dice Men Cometh, and we talk tabletop games, and we've had a week off. Did you miss us? Because we've been interstate attending one of Australia's best established and friendliest gaming conventions, BorderCon.
It's certainly been going for quite some time.
In Albury, Wodonga.
Yeah.
And it was my fourth BorderCon, your fifth.
My fifth, yeah.
Leon?
And my second.
And look, just generally, congratulations. Look, I promise we're not going to sort of be too sort of, oh, we met BorderCon. For, well.
But we were.
At least some of the show, that's true.
Yeah. And it was good.
Sincere thanks to the committee behind BorderCon. It's tough being so good, guys.
Mm.
It's tough.
It's very professionally run for a group of amateurs, that's for sure. And I thought the whole weekend, organisation-wise, went super smoothly. Like, nothing went wrong. The bar never ran out of beer. The games room, one of the games room was open all night, every night.
Props also to the venue, the Hoveltree,
yeah.
who really did look after us. Numbers were a little bit down this year. And I think that was noticeable, particularly after the controversy over the ticketing.
Mm.
But look, what are you going to do? They decided to make it a ticketed event because it was getting too crowded.
Yeah.
And they had a massive problem. Now, when they put the tickets for sale online, you would never back your own event to sell out in 5 seconds.
No, it was like 20 minutes, wasn't it? Which I know some of us, Trent, you know, weren't there sitting on the button thinking, oh, I've got to grab my BorderCon ticket because they're going to sell out. And it took everyone by surprise.
But, yeah, because the year before it was sold out. It did sell out the year before, but it was how long?
Couple of months
to 20 minutes
yep.
is insanity.
So what happened there is that many of the BorderCon alumni and the faithful actually missed out on those tickets in the initial rush.
Mm.
But then a lot of the people who bought the tickets in the rush decided at the last minute they couldn't go. So there was a sort of glut, and then it's too late to organise your flights and your accommodation. And
yeah.
And so there was a glut of tickets that were available at the end, completely out of the committee's control. I think they tried something. It maybe didn't quite work. So I do know that they are looking at how that's going to work.
I had a chat to Neil on, I think, the Sunday, and he did reveal that they've certainly got some plans for next year to do it quite a bit differently. I don't want to go into any details.
I feel sorry for him because it doesn't matter what they do with this.
It's always going to be someone unhappy.
Yeah, but they're a victim of their own success with the event.
Yes,
everyone wants to be there. The venue's at capacity. Mm. He was telling us the last time we talked to him that there isn't... they have it in Albury, which is obviously where they are, but it's a nice spot in the middle of... Canberra, Adelaide, Melbourne.
Yeah, so it's very to a lesser central. Extent.
Yeah.
And Sydney.
And there isn't a bigger venue that's affordable for them at this point.
Well, basically, if they wanted to go bigger, the next venue is like 1,000 people, and it's just too much effort to run an event like that they would, you know, I mean, I don't think they'd get 1,000 people.
No.
You know, they might get 300 or 350, but all of a sudden then you've got people rattling around in a venue that's way too big, and the ticket prices would have to go through the roof to fund that. So I think it was a very sensible decision to keep it at a manageable size.
Yeah, if it was like a venue that was, say, 500, then you'd go, well, let's go there and let's have a punt, at least for a year, and see how it goes. But it's just not in the cards if it's that many. You have to go with what you've got. And they shouldn't really change the location because, you know, it started there for a reason. And it's a nice place, especially for people like us, it's a nice place to kind of go a bit out of your comfort zone, go somewhere you never would before.
Yeah.
And as I said, it's a nice central point. If it was something, say, closer to Melbourne or closer to Sydney, you might get more people, but it wouldn't be as much of an event if people are just coming 5 minutes from their house.
Well, of course, there was an alternative event over the long weekend, mm-hmm. which was Shepparton. In Shepparton. And it's not like it was set up as a rival event or anything. It was about 50 or 60 people who couldn't make it into BorderCon, so they set up a venue in a city not that far away from it.
Yeah.
I do know the two committees were talking.
Yeah.
So who knows what that's going to look like next year.
And I did sort of give a yell out to a friend of the show, Justin, one of the organisers of Shepparton, to, excuse me, to... let us know how it went, because from my understanding, and I saw some photos, saw some Facebook posts, it went really well. I think they might have even had up to 70 people there playing games, I think just on the Saturday and the Sunday, but it looked like it went really well and complemented quite well. I mean, we would have loved to drop down there. It's just that it was really like a couple of hours' drive.
They were too busy playing games.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, there's that.
And as when we do our werewolf nights down here, we get around 70, 80 people here. And that is a solid group of people. We're talking about BorderCon and it's hundreds, and you talk about PAX where it's thousands. But 70 people, if you cram them into, say, a hall where they normally play, I don't know, like basketball or netball, it's a pretty good amount. That'd fill that place full of tables and gamers, because you can only fit 4 or 5 people on each table.
So... speaking of games, it was a good weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, my. You know, we talked about it in the week before we went, of some of the games we were looking forward to playing. I don't know about you guys. I crossed off almost every game on my list and then played a whole heap more.
I crossed off most on my list. There were a few that weren't there, sadly, but I'm going to have to buy them, probably from polymorphgames.com.au. But anyway... but yeah, so that was pretty good. But between the four of us, we played 40 unique games.
But Mark was the champion of actually in terms of numbers.
No, you remember one?
We were the same, I think.
Yeah.
We both got 22 in the end, yeah. Because, you know, we played some smaller filler games and stuff, some nominees for certain awards, which we may talk about if we have time.
I was nowhere near it, mainly because I played a lot of the same games twice. But
And you had a couple of longer games.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so gaming highlights of the weekend, gents, Leon.
Well, mine is pretty obvious if you've seen our Facebook feed, which was a game of luchador Mexican wrestling dice.
Only because you got to wear the mask.
I got to wear a mask. I got to play it with three other absolute legends, good blokes. And yeah, we got into it so much. Renee, who was the guy that had the game and had the wrestling mask, he's Hispanic himself and actually is a big Lucha Libre fan. And I myself am a humongous wrestling nerd. And it was a Saturday night. There'd been drinks had by, or at least me. I was on my few Coronas by that point. And by the end of it, we had about a dozen people watching us because we were really getting into it. Renee was counting on the table every time there was pinfalls. And if there was a chair smash in the game, people were standing up considering picking up their chairs. And it was mental. And yeah, I loved it.
I'm just glad they kept their shirts on.
As far as you know, we did.
I was going to say, I think it's going to be tights next year.
Mm. Mark?
So for me, are we talking highlight or most fun?
Oh, I don't know. They're not the same thing.
No, no. So, look, I want to talk most fun because this was the one I did have it on my list that I wanted to play, but it's funny, I'd never looked into it that much and I didn't quite understand what it was. I'm talking Mechs versus Minions.
Oh,
yes. Okay. And so I knew it was this monster game. I knew it was really cool. I knew it had lots of bits. I hadn't watched any videos. I just thought there's a lot of buzz around. I'd really like to try it.
Can I be completely honest? I heard Mechs versus Minions. My brain, because I'm a dad,
yeah,
went Despicable Me.
Yeah.
No interest.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. It's
nothing like that.
It's nothing like that at all.
So imagine, if you've ever played World of Warcraft, imagine the goblins from World of Warcraft with their crazy sort of machines, or goblins have, I guess, crazy sort of machines in lots of games, but big 3D painted models of those. So imagine them on a board that changes with missions like a computer game where you do a tutorial where you learn how to move. You do a next mission which shows you how to shoot, and on and on and on, and the missions get bigger and bigger and bigger. So imagine that in a board with these great big lovely painted minis and then the minions, and there is literally hundreds of them. They're all grey and silver, but they're dry brushed. So you've got that real 3D effect with them.
Pre-painted. Moving. They look amazing.
Oh, yeah. Moving around on a board. Then add in your robo-rally style programmed movement where you're drafting the cards that go into your program movement slots. But then when you take damage, computer glitches, and all of a sudden your program in step one might be pushed to step six, or your program in step one might completely fail, and you might be like Leon was during one game where he was just like stuck in a corner going,
I was stuck in a corner for a good four turns,
and he'd turn 180 degrees, then he'd turn 90 degrees, then he'd walk forward, but of course he was facing the corner at this stage, so he wasn't going anywhere. Then he'd shoot, which of course would do nothing. Then he'd turn 90 degrees, then he'd turn 180 degrees, and he'd end up facing the same way. It was hilarious.
The production values on this thing, Mechs versus Minions, it looks like you're playing with toys.
Well, I was going to say, Mark's enthusiasm is actually, oddly enough, kind of downgrading. It has the best components in board game history. Yeah. And I don't think that's even up for debate, anyone that's seen this in the flesh. Mm-hmm. It is perfect for how it looks, and the insert, the cards, the box, the fact that you can get it shipped from the publisher themselves, which is the same guys that make the League of Legends board games, for like $160.
That's got to be a loss leader.
It's got. I don't reckon they'd be making a cent off this game whatsoever. They can't be, because this game, the fact that it's under $200 is insanity.
The box is the size of a wine crate.
I was going to say, it's huge. It's and like, it uses every single bit of it, and it uses it perfectly.
I would say they've got some fantastic inserts for all your minis. So it's the same size as the Gloomhaven box, really, but the Gloomhaven box is mostly full of cardboard and chits.
Yeah.
This thing is mostly full of 3D models, painted, dry brushed, looking amazing.
And as our good friend Richard, who actually brought the game and
Thank you so much, Richard, taught us,
he's a big fan of saying it's the same price as Food Chain Magnate, which is a box filled with very bland cardboard. Might be a great game, but it's a box full of bland cardboard.
So, Trent,
Food Chain Magnate was certainly one of the games that we saw a lot of over the weekend. It was being played everywhere, along with Terraforming Mars.
Yeah. Yes, Terraforming Mars was probably, there was 50% Terraforming Mars, and then everything else.
So, Trent, what was your highlight?
Undoubtedly, the two games of Archipelago I played.
What?
And I know you guys just gave me so much crap about this. Archipelago, it's been out for a few years now from Lucadeli Games.
Yep.
Christophe Bollinger, the French designer, and the guy I was playing with, my mate Ian, described it best. Christophe Bowling Era has completely trolled gamers and particularly 4X players with this thing because Archipelago looks like a standard 4X game.
Yeah.
You got your hex tiles, your
resources,
you're exploring, exploiting natives. It's got a crunchy economic side. There's no dice. And it's completely unpredictable.
Well, as you said you played two games of it. I debate that's not true. I think you played 1.5 games of it.
We set, because it's got various game lengths and rules that you can set, we put everything on max, everything on long, five players. We all knew what we were doing.
So you were expecting 4 hours minimum. You would think 4 hours bare minimum.
First time round, game ends before two turns are finished.
Yes.
Wow.
Right? Because the pacifist effect came into someone had that goal. I won't explain what that is. Anybody who's played the game might know. So we just kind of looked at each other and went, that's not right. I'm not satisfied with that. Let's meet again sometime tomorrow.
Yes.
And then, of course,
we did.
And then the game was over before three turns were over because the separatist function came in, and that was me, and I won. So that's always a highlight, winning anything.
Well, it's a great, though, to play a game you already know, because I know for me, my multiple highlights for all the new games I played. You played a game you already know and had a totally different reaction and a totally different experience based on playing with a group of new people.
And played it, well, it was a mix of new and some of the guys like Ian who I'd played with there before, and it's rapidly becoming a tradition that we're going to play Archipelago, I think, every time we go to this thing. And another thing I'd like to establish as a tradition was some late-night fiasco.
Oh, yes.
Although the content of the game perhaps best goes unmentioned, but look, because the thing about Fiasco, the GM-less RPG,
mm-hmm.
no matter how bad you think it's going to be, it's always worse. I mean, as far as the... Because we played the ice scenario, which is, I guess, kind of like the thing, or like, you know, a team of people.
Like Ice Station Zebra, that sort of thing?
You're trapped in McMurdo Station in Antarctica, and it was a mix of... In the scenario, it was a mix of couples and mad scientists and religious zealots. And we were caught up in some kind of genetic experiment, crossbreeding seals and starfish, and I really had no idea what was going on. My character was doing data entry in Antarctica, working with this religious crackpot co-worker who just badgered me all day, and the PA was incessantly blaring religious announcements that were mandated by the HR department. It was just kind of like my idea of hell. And it just really went downhill from there, and none of the content in it is broadcastable at all. Put it this way, there was one scene shared by Garth and I, which got a little bit intimate.
So were you and Garth one of these aforementioned couples?
That's right. That's right. And of course, in Fiasco, you're assigning those roles to each other just purely to be vindictive.
Yes.
Such a great game.
So you've come from Tasmania to represent fine Tasmanians, and what you've done is you've sat down with a relative of yours and gone to everyone, guys, we're together in this game. You just can't help yourself,
me.
Can you?
It wasn't me. Look, in all seriousness, I think the weekend felt like a little bit of a reconnection to the hobby for me, and particularly to our audience, because we had so many of the Dice Men listeners there. And for anyone who listens or said hi or just joined in or whatever, I'm so, so appreciative that you take the time to listen and took the time to come up and say good day, because it's actually had quite a profound effect on me over the
weekend. It was really refreshing to me to get that reminder of, firstly, there are actually some people listening out there. And secondly, to, you know, that they listen every week, they listen regularly, and they're actually... I got to shout out David, who I played half a game with. But, you know, he said, oh, my favourite episode, episode 20. And I was like, episode 20? What the hell did we do in episode 20? And apparently we talked about the the mad woman from Games Paradise in Sydney.
Hello
to the mad woman from Games Paradise in Sydney.
She will hear you.
Anyway, David
she'll come and get us.
David was up a ladder while he was listening to this, and he almost fell off with laughter.
Oh, my God.
Because living in Sydney, he knows this woman. He actually sends people to her to buy games for a joke so they can come back and tell the stories of how bad it was.
No, it's not true. None of it's true. And a shout-out to the crazy lady.
Yes.
Games Paradise, who we love a lot. She's certainly an institution in the hobby.
Or Miss Content, as we call her. And that's what she provides.
And a shout-out also to polymorphgames.com.au, because they support us, and Polymorph Games are not only polyhedral, but they're also presumably morphologists and gamey.
They sell amazing stuff at great prices. Check out their website. Website, polymorphgames.com.au.
Polyhedral website. And we're going to talk about a game that you can purchase from there or anywhere else, including Games Paradise, if you really, really have to. next, with what we've been playing coming up in a moment on the Dice Man Cometh Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Cool Sounds Runs Wild.
Cool Sounds Runs Wild is right. It's Radio 99.3 FM.
With the Dice Men Cometh, brought to you this week by polymorphgames.com.au, the bestest place on the internet to get your games. Now, as we just said, we went to BorderCon this past weekend. We're going to be talking about the games we played there for quite some time. The drive up was about 4 hours long, but we entertained ourselves, as we said before, with some games, and Trent and I had some lovely, relaxing music. But for the last half an hour, for some reason, we decided to put Mark's music on, and he did some torturous, horrible things to
awful.
Us.
Awful.
And that half an hour was the longest half an hour of my life. So when we got to BorderCon, we said hello to all our friends and family and whatever else and looked at all the games and stuff. There was a game there I saw on the shelf and I thought, you know, just to torture Mark, I should not mention this, but I'm gonna because I want to play it too. And it was a game that I believe was on the top of Mark's want to play list.
Yes.
And there was one copy there and I saw it and I saw the man who owned it putting it up and I thought, I reckon we can get stuck into that straight away if I worm my way into this. And that's what we did. We walked in the door. 5 minutes later, we were playing this.
Clank.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom. Was the number one game I was looking forward to play at BorderCon. And huge shout out to Roger, whose copy it was, who taught us, who I don't know if he even knew who we were and knew what he was in for with the three of us sitting down playing Clank.
Not at all.
But look, let me tell you a little bit about it. It's been a bit of a hit. It's currently ranked number 5 on Board Game Geek in family games, number 53 in strategy games, believe it or not, and number 86 overall of all games ever.
Wow. And, of course, recently got that little Mensa Award.
Well, it got a Mensa Award. It was nominated in the 2016 Golden Geeks for most innovative board game, board game of the year, best thematic board game, best family board game, and best card game. It didn't win any of those, but the fact it was nominated in 5 different award categories, it's clearly highly thought of.
Most innovative.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with it, but so Clank is a deck building game, you know, where you're adding cards to your deck. Oh, you turned me right down. You're adding cards to your deck, building
a deck?
Building a deck. So it's a deck building game.
Yes.
But, you know, there are a lot of those. But then you've got this board element. And the board is a dungeon. And what you're doing is you're moving down through this dungeon, collecting treasure, magical things.
Because you are a dirty, dirty thief.
That's right. But it's not just any old dungeon crawler where you just stroll through the dungeon and fight things, because you have to be sneaky. And, of course, the reason you have to be sneaky little, not necessarily hobbitses, but sneaky-like little hobbitses, is because, of course, there is a dragon sleeping in the dungeon.
As you do.
Yeah.
And so while you're moving around, you make clank! Exclamation mark. Which is noise as you're making around, basically.
How do these massive dragons get into these underground dungeons?
No one ever really explains that.
Oh, I think they...
Oh, you hatch from an egg and they're born and raised.
Well, no. I mean, the precedent was set with Smaug coming through the dwarf gate and just sleeping in there under the treasure, but...
Maybe someone finds a dragon and builds a dungeon around
them. Oh, that must be it.
I don't know. Anyway, so Clank is a sort of a currency in the game represented by cubes, and every time you have to add Clank, you are adding a cube to a particular spot on the board that says Clank. I'm probably going to say Clank a lot in this Clank review.
Possibly.
But whenever you reveal a card in one of the cards that you're trying to buy, you reveal a card with a dragon on it, you take all those Clank cubes, you put them in a bag that starts off with just black cubes in them, you put in all these cubes of the player's colour, and then you draw out a certain number. Now, it starts off, I think, with about 2, but the more of these cards you draw, And the more dragon eggs you find.
Yep, and the more artifacts you take, and if somebody ends up escaping the dungeon. Yeah. Basically, the dragon gets more annoyed as you make more sound and do more things in the dungeon, which makes perfect sense.
That's right. You draw more of these cubes, which are representing damage to the players, and there's a little damage track on the bottom of the board that you place the cubes on. If you ever get to the end, which I think is 10 cubes, you're dead. Now, it's not all bad being dead. So if you happen to be dead in the top half of the dungeon, well, the story is the local villagers find you, drag you to the surface, manage to sort of resurrect you, and you still get to have your points in the game.
Yeah, and that's only in the top half because the board is separated between there's you know, a grassy ground across the middle of the board, the castle above it, the dungeons below
it. That's right. So if you ever happen to die in the bottom half, the underground section of the game, then you're dead.
Not just mostly dead.
But you wouldn't do that because you're a thief. You'd easily go down and grab it and escape, wouldn't you? Isn't that the whole point of this game?
So the other thing that can happen, Leon...
No, I wouldn't know.
Is someone escapes out of the top of the dungeon. Now, you get a bonus for doing that. Once the first person, or should I say the first... Oh, I can't even say that term on radio. The first horribly personage escapes,
It's not the worst thing I've ever been called.
Escapes. Then, basically, when it comes around to their turn again... They hop along one space, which triggers a clanky thing, but basically they get three more turns and then the game ends. So that's the game end timer.
I like to think that that was triggered by the adulation of the crowd and all the villagers that, hey, one of them got out finally. I can't believe this guy actually knows what he's doing.
So when someone escapes, then they move along those last, I think it's three turns, then the game ends. And again... If you happen to be unlucky enough, because there's a lot of luck involved here, to be under the ground when that happens, then you also die. And even if you have more points than anyone else in the game,
but a piss farting around at the bottom of a dungeon,
you are
because
dead.
Because you're too greedy and stupid to get out when the end game gets triggered.
Then you are dead, and your points count for zilch, zip, nada.
Yeah,
I think that Clank is a damn near perfect. Yes, I'll say it. Yeah. Mix of deck building, push your luck, and racing.
Yes,
and
that's what it is.
That little trigger where the first player out of the dungeon triggers the end game, but that player may not necessarily be the winner, or the person with the most points may not be the winner.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it.
It's not just that. You're racing because you're trying to get these artifacts at the bottom of the board that are worth several different points and whatnot. You're all racing at the start to get down there and get to them, to try and get the best ones or what you think is the best combination. And as you said, get out. And yeah, just the idea of a racing game mixed with a deck building game, it's just,
mixed with dungeon crawling. And so you've got, between all the rooms on the board, you've got, sometimes you need extra movement points to go to a particular room. Sometimes you go into a crystal cavern, which could be trademarked for another game, but you have to stop. Sometimes there are rooms and they have locks between them, and the only way you can traverse that is to go and buy a key in the market that happens to be underground, where all the good people go. But there's only two keys to buy.
And then some of us leave.
And there's four people in the game. There can be. And there's only two keys to buy.
But you haven't even mentioned the deck that you get given that actually enables you to do all of this.
So that's right. So then you've got cards that give you... I can't even remember what the... Money. Ostensibly. But it's points you use to buy new cards.
Yep.
A blue diamond symbol, whatever. I don't think it's called money. But you use those points to buy new cards and put them into your deck, as in a normal deck builder.
Yep.
You get movement points, a little foot shape, that lets you move one or two or more spots. You get some cards that give you really great movement, but, of course, because you're running fast, you are generating clank points.
That's it.
You get cards that interact with other cards. There's some neat little combos. And then you also get attack points because in a way that's a little bit similar to Ascension, you have, I think, five cards out, and then you have four cards you can you always have available to buy.
I've never played Ascension, but quite a few people have compared Clank to it.
Because it does have, it has, for example, in Clank you have this goblin. You can always fight the goblin. I think if you've got 2 points of attack, you fight the goblin and you get one bit of gold.
Right.
So you can always do that as an attack. That card never goes away.
And most deck building games will have a card, maybe two, that you can buy that's kind of like, you can buy it for next to nothing and you can put it into your deck. It's a little bit better than your starting cards, but normally, the four cards in this are actually all worth getting.
Yeah.
And you always have access to them.
Yeah, because you've got one which is pure, the secret tome or the magic tome, which is just pure victory points.
Yep.
You've got a more advanced movement that gives you currency and movement points.
Yep. You've got the kill the goblin, and then you've got the other one.
Yeah, that other one. I can't remember.
Gives you attack, the mercenaries.
Ah, yes,
which
that's
we all bought very quickly.
Yeah. And then you've got the cards that are coming out each turn, where every time you buy one, you put a new one out, and there's five always available. They're the ones that are triggering the dragon's attack. But there's a huge range of different ones. And then, just because you can never have enough cards, there's an expansion!
As you do.
And in the base game of Clank, it's a double-sided board, so you've got two different dungeons you can go into, and they're quite different.
Yeah.
In the expansion, you've got another double-sided board, but this time, instead of going like underground and above ground, in the underground part, you actually go under water.
Yeah.
And there are equipments you can buy, like diving helmets and things. But apparently, if you go underwater and you don't, at some stage in your turn, pop your head up above water, you take a damage, unless you've got these like diving helmets. And then the second side of the board is a pirate ship with a dungeon.
That sounds awesome. Instead of a dragon, is there a kraken?
No, it's still it's a watery dragon. Soggy dragon.
Well, they almost had my money.
I love the whole idea of accumulating the Clank points and making them work. Because any game where a player's essentially committing some kind of suicide in order to get an advantage, that's always appealing to me.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that says.
Well, I didn't quite get the level of pushy luck that this game has.
If there's a choice between playing conservatively the way you were or just punching myself in the face in order to just go out in a blaze of glory, I'm always going to choose the latter. I don't care. At least I'll have died trying.
Well,
and as I put it to you, because you were saying, oh, Trent, you got a little bit of Clank there, I sort of turned to you and said, well, it's not called shush.
No.
Well, the most hilarious thing to me was, 1 minute I was the healthiest man in the dungeon by a mile, like I had two hit points against me or something, and you guys were almost dead. In fact, you did die, Trent. And then the next minute...
In a blaze of glory.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. And then
dramatically.
I was the healthiest dead man in the dungeon with no points.
And I had escaped with all my treasures, but none of us won.
That's right, because Roger, he just plodded along, did a bit of this and a bit of that, and I don't think he quite got out towards the end, but he was certainly in the top half of the dungeon.
No, he got out.
That's right, he got out just before the end.
He basically saw our strategy and went, okay, well, that guy's going fast. Yeah. That guy's going for heaps of treasure. That guy's going the Blaze of Glory route. I will just be sensible.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will win.
And he cleaned us up.
That's what it... Well, he only beat me by a bit.
And I loved the way the game ramped up as it went. The dragon got tougher, the challenges got harder the deeper you went into the dungeon, and at the same time, your deck gets satisfyingly full of the tricky power cards that you want that let you kick a bit of ass and get a bit of loot. All around, very, very satisfying and kid-friendly, I think.
Yeah,
I don't think it's that complicated.
Yeah. No, and there's no iconography that's a bit... So you'd be fine to play this with young
people. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I've played a lot of deck builders. This one played really, really smoothly. My only tiny, tiny, tiny complaint...
Ooh.
Just because I have played a lot of deck builders is I'd like to see a few more cards that do let you thin your deck a little bit, because your deck does start to get big. But there were some, there just weren't many, and I think there are more of those in the expansion. Look, I've had this on order for quite a while with Polymorph Games, and it's been sold out. I think it's about 2 weeks away now from coming in, and I am still getting it now that I've played it. In fact, I can't wait. And I'm going to get the expansion as well.
Yeah, well, to fight back with your criticism, just for funsies, you've got to remember that this is the base game. This is the first game.
Yes.
So the fact that it doesn't have the takeout card type of thing, look at any, mostly deck-building games, because they're the games that get heaps of expansions.
Mm.
Like Marvel Legendary, one of my favourites ever, deck-building game. The base game of that is good. Once it got expansions,
yes,
it became amazing.
Yeah.
So, and the base for this game, for how simple it is, it's something I think that everyone should have a crack at, or a clank at. Get it? It doesn't actually make sense. Because I watched, I think, a video of this before it came out, and it's one of those ones that I saw the video of, and I went, yeah, it looks all right, but it didn't blow me away. But then once we actually started playing it, straight away snapped in and went, okay, I get
it now. Wouldn't even worry about expansions or not. I think this is just pretty much close to perfect as it is. I wouldn't have said that there was life in anything or I had any interest in another dungeon crawler.
Yeah.
But there you go. I've been proven wrong.
Yeah.
Well, all three of us on the drive home, all three of us contemplated saying that this was our game of the convention.
Yeah.
It for either fun or actual quality of gameplay, and it was the first game we played.
Now, speaking of award-winning games, we've got another game that we've been playing to talk about very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And Leon, you wanted to talk about Spiel des Jahres nominee King Domino.
Indeed.
By Bruno Cathala, that you managed to get to the table.
I certainly did. Do we want to do that now? We're going to have a little breaky break?
No,
we're
going to
do it now.
Rip into it.
So, King Domino, one of the nominees for the Spiel des Jahres by Blue Orange Games, which are mainly, they do a lot of kid-friendly type kind of games, and there is really not much to this one, to be perfectly honest. It's Carcassonne Dominoes. That's the best way to explain it. And I played a game of this. It took 10 minutes. I then taught it to Mark a few hours later and a few other people, and again, only took 10, 15 minutes. All it is a stack of dominoes, and you will put your character. You've got a little character and you've got a little kingdom that you're trying to build, which is a 5x5 square, and they've each got different terrain types on these tiles that have two different sections to it. You will put down your little meeple. There's four of them out there. You'll pick one that you want, and then next turn there will be another four in the row, and whoever goes first is based off the previous turn order that you went. So if you keep putting your meeple up the top, you'll keep taking all the top tiles, but you don't really know if it's going to help you or not, because you need to try and match up all the different terrains to make it score better, and you need to get these crowns, which are actually the scoring mechanism for the game. You need these crowns, which are like little castles, which go on like there's the sand castle one or the water castle and whatever else. And so you'll just go after that, trying to get the best combination that you can, and that's about it. It only takes 10 minutes.
I couldn't have less interest in this. Maybe if you slapped a Warhammer theme on it, I might be less interested, but no.
It's like, I enjoyed it, and it's a game that I think a lot of people could, like, families could have in their collection if, for the right price point, you wouldn't want to pay much more than, like, $20 or something for it.
When I played it, like, I liked it just for what it was, but when I played it, to me, it just screamed Spiel des Jahres, like the perfect family game you can throw down on the table, explain in 30 seconds, plays in 10 or 15 minutes, and people go, hey, that was fun, let's play it again. Like, perfect fit for that award. And for that reason, if it does, I mean, I haven't played the other ones, but just sort of hearing about them, to me, this will win the award hands down. Because they've gone so light now on the Spiel des Jahres.
Well, that's the thing. I think it's that light that I would argue that it should be in the Kinderspiel, if anything, because I think it's basically a child's game.
Look, there is a tiny bit of strategy with those crown multipliers and how you set up your 5x5 grid, and you've got to be really careful not to sort of block yourself out because, you know, you've got the two different types of terrain on each of the tiles.
Yeah.
So, teensy bit of a strategy there.
I think it just proves the one thing about the Spiel des Jahres, and that is that it's really only about the German retail market.
Yep.
Right?
I'd agree.
What elevates this game above 100 others like it? I think there's this one thing, and that's Bruno Cathala's name on it. Which I'm actually not that surprised to sort of see his name on something like this, because, I mean, we might associate him with the sort of mid-weight Days of Wondering Euros that we enjoy, like what's the new one called?
Yamatai.
Or Five Tribes or The Abyss. But he does like to mix it up with lighter fare, and he likes to design in a few different categories, Bruno does.
Yeah.
Different types of games.
Yeah.
So look, there may well be a good game here for a family, but I'm quite comfortable to saying
I wouldn't be surprised.
It's not for me.
I wouldn't be surprised because this is so perfect for that category. I wouldn't be surprised if you sat down and said, This year, I will fuck yous on a Spiel des Jahres winning game.
Yes. Yes, that's probably exactly how he didn't say that.
Thank but you, yeah. Thank you, Mark, for referencing a joke from about episode 60.
Yeah, something like that.
Maybe
before the show got good.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying that the game is bad. By the way, I'm saying it's fine. It's not award winning because it's nothing. Eh. It's fine. Have a crack.
Well, I guess we've got to try and get Magic Maze, and I think it's The Road to El Dorado.
Yeah.
I think that one, the El Dorado one, is only
German.
In German.
Yep.
Magic Maze isn't, and I was surprised to learn that it was the same game that I'd heard Shut Up and Sit Down talk about, where you've got adventurers in a shopping mall, and they're trying to do stuff, but you're not allowed to communicate with the party. And how you communicate is you put this big red pawn in front of someone and you bang it on the table.
Yeah.
Look, if anyone out there has played Magic Maze, I'd love to hear what it's like. So send us a Gmail, dicemancometh@gmail.com. Put it on our Facebook page or do something. Let us know what you think.
I think I did hear somebody at BorderCon say they'd played it and hated it.
Mm.
I do believe it was that. Anywho.
Hey, we've got to shut up because we've got a bunch of stuff to do before the show finishes and we're running out of time. Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This is the Dice Man Cometh, and that's what we've been playing lately.
That was Imager by Barbarossa here on the Dice Man Cometh at Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Proudly supported, and we proudly support polymorphgames.com.au. Our fantastic mate Neil, based right here in Hobart. They have got an awesome range of not only board games and card games, but your geek paraphernalia and all other geeky stuff you'd like to do. And they've got a massive 25% off at the moment with their Stocktake sale. Just enter the code STOCKTAKE in capital letters for the 25% off and tell him that the Dice Men sent you, because helping out our sponsors is also good for us.
Lovely.
We also must thank the guys from Rule and Make, who, of course, have been running the Hand of Fate Kickstarter. At the time of broadcast, it's past 300K.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, I know, a bit of a target for them.
Well, it's up to, 330 now.
Yeah.
I think their target was 350, which makes it the most I've forgotten words.
Australian board game on Kickstarter.
Dems the words.
And look, speaking of Kickstarter, although, because I haven't had a chance to do a Kickstarter update for a little while, just a quick shout out about Lucidity, Six-Sided Nightmares. It is a new Aussie Kickstarter by Shannon Kelly. I think it's his first game. And I've seen a bit of talk about this on the Tabletop Game Designers of Australia forum. Now, he's after $14,900. And as of this show, he's raised $14,800.
Lovely. Australian Kickstarter funded.
To escape or become a nightmare and terrorise your friends. Lucidity, Six-Sided Nightmares.
So it's it does look pretty.
Like a sort of a dice-building-y, dice-rolling-y game. The art is done by a tattoo artist.
Ooh.
So it's very sort of... It's clearly a horror game. He's got Barjo to do the voiceover for his video on Kickstarter, which...
Well done.
That's a good thing or not. I don't know. But look, it's about to fund. It's still got 33 days to go. So get behind another Aussie Kickstarter, Lucidity, Six-Sided Nightmares, and see what you think.
And the Rule and Make guys, in addition to running great Kickstarters, have also provided us with three copies of Burger Up,
the Kickstarter version,
with exclusives in it. We've been asking people to send in selfies of themselves eating a burger.
Mm-hmm.
And congratulations to our three winners, Jeremy Beats, long-time listener and friend of the show. He's won a copy of Burger Up, to send in a picture of himself with his daughter. Also, Rob Turok, who braved a chicken burger from his school canteen for the photo. And I'm just going to... I just want to let him win just because he's risked his life and botulism.
And the third one, Chris Mann, who was chowing down on an awesome burger. They are our three lucky winners. We need them to get in touch with us and give us their shipping address.
or just Rob, and he can come around and grab it from the house.
And if you don't mind, we're going to just stick pictures of you eating burgers on Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, thanks so much again to Rule and Make for providing us with those. Those guys are going to do an awesome job.
I can't believe I didn't win with my picture of me eating a burger having the plague at the same time.
I'm pretty sure I can believe that.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Hey, just quickly, I want to send a shout out to the guys at Mind Games in the new store in Swanston Street.
Yes.
Yeah, obviously, they've had a store in Swanston Street for a long, long time. They opened up another store a little bit closer to Flinders Street Station in Melbourne, and it's a great shop, two-story, absolutely packed to the rafters. It is not a nice end of town, just around there. And the other night, I believe that one of the guys behind the jump there got attacked.
Oh, gee.
Some lunatic has just come in with a bat of some kind and started smashing.
Seafall is not as good as you said it was, you bastards!
I believe somebody actually got taken to hospital.
Oh, dear.
Mark, you didn't know, so I'm going to forgive that comment, as accurate as it may be. look, just a shout-out to say, we're thinking of you guys, because no one should have to put up with that in their workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I want to give another shout out because, hey, why not? Exitus, Exit Us, the escape room in the Strike Bowling Alley in Melbourne where we went on the Thursday night.
Oh, this was good fun.
Before we went to Melbourne, before we went to BorderCon, the lovely young lady there was fantastic to explain it all. But look, I hadn't done the escape rooms that you guys have done, but this was a grade A experience, complete with jump scares on a number of occasions in this haunted house. And we can't give any more away because it would spoil it. But
well, it was actually the lovely people at Evolo, the escape room here in Hobart, who put us on to this one and recommended it to us. And it's a fantastic experience. And yeah, again, one of those things that you just can't talk about because you're going to spoil it.
Yeah, but look, if you get the chance, go and, I mean, go and do a Volo because they're here in Hobart and they're fantastic. But if you're in Melbourne, go to Exodus, be like us, have a few cocktails beforehand in the bar.
Because it really helps.
And have a ridiculous amount afterwards as well at the bar next door, which was quite nice.
That's right, but it was an awesome experience. So thank you so much, Exodus.
Yes.
All right, we're out of here. This has been the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, proudly supported by Polymorph Games and Hobbies, board games, collectibles and more, with a minimum 10% off recommended retail price and more with their sale that's happening right now. We'll be back next week, or at least some of us will.
Absolutely.
Who's taking a week off next week?
Me.
You are?
I've got night shift to do. Someone's going to make the chocolate for all you sexy people.
Say hello to the Oompa Loompas for us.
I shall.
All right, ciao. See you next week.
Bye.
Booyah.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh, thanks to polymorphgames.com.au. You can say hello to the Dice Men on Facebook, Instagram, and www.dicemencometh.com. You can support us by leaving a review on iTunes, or by becoming a Patreon supporter for as little as just $1 per month. Thank you.